The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Now, Paul Hard loves musicals and stage shows, as well as being the author behind the brilliant Ross O'Carroll Kelly series. He's also done things like Postcards from the Ledge, which is back in the Gaiety next month. And he is now writing Copperface Jacks the Musical, which will be running in the Olympia from about the 5th of July. And I suspect it's sold out already, Paul, is it?
No, it's not quite sold out. There are plenty of tickets left. But yeah, it is, you know, it is one of those ideas that when I heard it first, I instantly laughed, and that's when I thought this was a good idea. It is that musicals are like that, you know. If I hear a title that makes me laugh, I will go to see it. So I had the instant urge to write this. I wanted to write it.
Okay, are you a regular in Copperface Jacks?
I was back in the day. Like, I wasn't. I'm not now. Like, I'm 47 now, and
probably some 47-year-olds hanging out in there.
There probably are divorcees. Probably, you know. I decided a long time ago that going to Copperface Jacks wasn't conducive to, you know, holding down a happy marriage. So I was a regular back around the sort of late 90s, early noughties.
Why? What is the attraction of Copperface Jacks? And particularly with you being a Dubliner. I thought it was supposed to be from people from the country all the time.
Well, I kind of hung around with a group of friends, and there were about sort of seven or eight of us. And seven or eight males on the, you know, with no females in the group always find it difficult to get into a nightclub. It's just the way door policies are run. And I suppose around that time there were a lot of nightclubs in Dublin had a kind of exclusive door policy. And you know, for instance, like seven lads in Offaly jersey. I'm not saying I was wearing an Offaly jersey, but seven lads in Offaly jerseys could not walk up to the door of Reynard's and expect to get in. But they could go to Copperface Jacks and expect to get in. So if there was a group of lads or girls up from the country for a match, they could meet in Copperface Jacks. They could say, let's meet there afterwards. And they had an expectation.
There would be no problem getting in.
Yeah, yeah.
But beyond that, what makes it so special to people?
I think it's a combination of a few things. You were never charged a tenner for a pint, for instance. Like, you know, the drink was reasonably priced. The songs, the music they played there was incredibly cheesy, like floor fillers, you know, just music that if it came on in the car, you might turn it off. But because it comes on in a nightclub, you get the urge to run out to the dance floor and dance to it. And then as well as it, there's the sort of cheesy chat up lines as well that you hear there. And
hear or deliver, Paul?
I was always an observer, Matt. and then just the set, it never took itself too seriously, and the clientele never took itself seriously. And
the decor wasn't too serious. It wasn't one of these very cool clubs. It was very much like almost like a country hall in some respects.
Yeah, there weren't mirrors. You never sort of saw people looking at themselves, checking out their reflection in mirrors while posing to a song. You know, it was always...
It may not be the best looking in Offaly jersey.
Yeah, but an Offaly jersey is perfect to play air guitar in, you know, on your knees on the dance floor. And that's what it was. And it always had, to me, it always had the feel of a kind of GAA club disco. That's what it felt like. And I think that's its success. And everybody knows that a night in Coppers is a synonym for something wild, something a bit archaic.
Made very famous, I think, wasn't it, Brian Cullen from the... Receiving the Sam in 2011, wasn't it?
Yeah, his last words before he lifted it were, I'll see us all in Coppers.
Okay, so tell us the story that you're going to do in the musical. Have you written the whole thing yet at this stage?
I have, yes, I have. So it's the story, we wanted to kind of give it the Moulin Rouge West Side Story treatment. So it's the story of a girl called Nolene Geralt from Carrisaveen, County Kerry, she comes to Dublin to fulfil her lifelong dream, which is to work in the claims department of the VHI. And she arrives in Dublin and she's living in this bedsit on Harcourt Street. She discovers that Dublin isn't what she thought it would be. It's a big, big city, lonely place. And one night she's sitting lonely in her bedsit and she hears the strains of Maniac 2000 coming across Harcourt Street from Copperface Jacks. And she says, what is this? And she wanders across the road and she walks into this club. And I'm sure it's the experience that a lot of people from outside of Dublin who move to Dublin have when they go to Copperface Jacks. She just feels the loving embrace of this club around her. And she says, this is a little bit of home here. So while she's in the club, she's warned before she leaves Carras Eileen to watch out for those Dublin lads. They're trouble. They'll get you into all sorts of trouble. But she falls in love with the captain of the Dublin football team, who's called Gino Byrne, and he works as a Dublin Corporation clamper. And like West Side Story, it's the story of how two people from vastly different backgrounds try to find love despite all of the obstacles presented by their very, very different backgrounds.
With lots of songs. How many songs do you have to write?
With lots of songs and
like
slow
this?
Dances. There's about, I've written 16. There's three or four more I want to add in, but I think it's too many. So it happened with Anglo the Musical as well, that you always end up with too many songs. And usually, you know, at the first reading, when you sit down with the cast to listen to it, you think there's too many ballads or, you know, there's too many character songs. You always get a sense of that.
As a songwriter, what instruments do you play?
The spoons.
Yeah, you're not a guitarist or a pianist or anything, are you?
No. I've musical appreciation in the sense that I know what I like, but I can't play music.
The lyrics?
Well, what I do, I write the lyrics, but I'm also writing tunes in my head, and I think they're originals. And then when I sit down with the musicians, I discover
where you've lifted them from.
I've written Jesus Christ Superstar, and that happened with Anglo as well. You know, you write all these songs and you think they're original. You know, I wrote Memory from Cats as well, but it's not an original either.
So this is all done and this is going to be on in July. What did you learn from Anglo the Musical, though, as well, as to how to actually do a musical?
Well, I think the big lesson with Anglo was when the DPP say close down, you should probably close down. Anglo, you know, it's only now 6 years on I can actually talk about it with a smile on my face, because it was incredibly stressful at the time. The mistake with Anglo really was we couldn't foresee it. But after we entered into the rehearsal room, there were charges relating to three of the former directors of Anglo.
And we better be careful here, because there is an ongoing trial at present going on as well.
Yeah. So we were under pressure not to go ahead with the show, but from solicitors representing them and from the DPP. And we were kind of quite a way down the road at that stage. You know, the Borgosh Energy Theatre had been booked for a month. There were buses all over Dublin with Anglo the Musical on the side. And we chose to go ahead, and it was incredibly stressful. And actually, it was between meetings with solicitors. Met a solicitor in the morning who was advising me on the likelihood of me losing my home, and then a solicitor in the afternoon who was advising me on the likelihood of me going to jail for contempt of court. And in between that, Darren Smith, who's the co-producer of both Anglo and this show, said we should have just done Coppers the Musical. And that was the moment. We both realised our lives would be a lot easier if we'd done Coppers the Musical in 2012. But it was one of those moments where our eyes both went wide and we realised what a great idea it was.
Has it been cast yet?
Not yet, no. It'll be cast in the next few weeks.
Okay, so this is something obviously clear you're really looking forward to. But
yeah,
you know what?
There's
going to be a very high threshold. There's going to be enormous expectation on this one.
Yeah, I know. And that's it, because we want to do it justice as well. And people are going to come to this with an expectation. And they're going to come to it with the same expectation they have when they go for a night in Coppers, which is there's going to be great music, there's going to be great laughs, and they're going to go home feeling like they've had a great night out. And that's the challenge, that's the pressure on us.
Okay, and you're going to have to try and recreate Coppers as well. Will Cathal Jackson give you a hand with that?
Well, I met Cathal for lunch about 2 weeks ago, and he's really behind the idea. You know, he really likes it.
Yeah, it's the best publicity he could have for the venue, which is at this stage, what is it, 25 years on the go, is it?
I think it was the late 90s. So
it's about 20 years.
I mean, it's an institution at this stage. It's a social icon.
Listen, while I have you there, just to finish off, over the weekend, somebody died who I know you were very close to because your brilliant book of recent years, I heard the news today, oh boy, the story of Tara Brown, his brother, Gareth died. Tell us about a little bit about him, because he had a fascinating life as well.
He did. He was an amazing man. I mean, he was a patron of the arts. He really revitalized traditional Irish music in the 1960s when it was dead. I mean, in the 60s, the only people who bought traditional Irish music were tourists, you know, and every album you saw had, you know, a leprechaun on the cover and a rainbow and a shamrocks, and it was very, very twee. And Gareth, who this was the music of his childhood, he absolutely loved this music.
And I should say, a member of the Guinness family, actually a direct descendant of Arthur Guinness.
Of Arthur Guinness, yeah. And he used to go to the Flack Hills and the west of Ireland and record this music, and he brought it back and made it cool, like, you know, managed the Chieftains, made those albums look... He gave them a sort of element of 60s cool, you know, they put castles and dolmens on the covers of the albums and they looked great. And he was just a great patron of the arts. But his real gift, I think, was friendship. And I became really good friends with Gareth over the 10 years I worked on the book and the 2 years subsequent to that. And, you know, hospitality, he had his mother's gift for hospitality. You know, he opened his doors to everybody. And when he would call you on a Sunday morning and say, come to lunch, you never knew who was going to be in the house. You know, it could be, you know, Pierce Brosnan, the Estonian ambassador to Ireland, and, you know, two members of the travelling community who played the Ilan pipes, who we met in the Roundwood Inn on Friday afternoon. And suddenly there's this session in the house. And he was really an extraordinary figure, you know, and people who knew him, I think there's a huge void is going to open up in their lives, because he was the adhesive that held so many disparate groups of people and friends together.
Paul Hart, it's great seeing you. I'm looking forward to Copperface Jack's musical. It's going to be the hit of the summer, undoubtedly.
Thanks, Matt.
I love Kerry and Dublin. Who'll win, I wonder, in that match when it comes to it, as you've said.
Well, let's just hope for a draw.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.